ACIP, the voice of interventional pain management.
Thank you for joining us once again for the ACIP podcast. I'm Tom Krege with the American Society of Interventional Pain Physicians. In this episode, we'll be talking with Dr. Hans Hansen about dealing with difficult patients. In the news segment, we'll find out about smoking's relationship with pain relief, what is required to prescribe medical marijuana in New York, the best and worst states for practicing medicine, and more. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by StimWave, maker of the Freedom Spinal Cord Stimulation System. Find out more about the Freedom Spinal Cord System at www.stimwave.com. And by St. Jude Medical, makers of spinal cord stimulation and radiofrequency therapy products. Visit them at professional.sjm.com. Well, there's still time to sign up for one of the three didactic courses that we'll be conducting at the end of February in Orlando, Florida. They are a lumbar endoscopic disc decompression course, as well as a hands-on cadaver workshop, a controlled substance management course, and a regenerative medicine review course and hands-on cadaver workshop. We'll also have a competency exam and controlled substance management the day after that course. In addition, the ABIP, or American Board of Interventional Pain Physicians Part 1 exam, will be held that weekend. For specific information on these courses and exams, and to register for them online, just go to our website, www.asip.org. The ACIP 18th Annual Meeting will be held April 15th through the 17th at the Hyatt Regency Dallas and is being held in conjunction with the Texas Pain Society. The keynote speakers are set, and it is a world-class lineup. Dr. William Murrell will speak on the current landscape of regenerative medicine. Dr. Murrell is the president of the American Musculoskeletal Wellness Institute in Maryland. Dr. Kenneth Patin trademarked the phrase, "Friends, don't let friends get fused." He is listed as one of the top 50 spine and specialist surgeons to know in America. The title of his talk is Application of Regenerative Medicine in Spinal Pain. Dr. Devi Nampiah-Parimpal is another featured speaker. You've heard Dr. Devi on previous ACIP podcasts and have seen her on national media such as Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, and other media outlets. She is an ACIP board member, published author, and educator. She also has a private practice in Manhattan. ACIP Board Chairman and CEO Dr. Lakshmaya Manchakani is this year's featured speaker for the Raj Rocks Distinguished Lecture Series. His talk is titled, Interventional Pain Management, The Time of Our Lives. Robert Leshefsky is scheduled as a keynote speaker on Saturday. He is the president of Health Policy and Strategy Associates, Incorporated, a policy and marketplace consulting firm specializing in assisting its clients through the significant health policy and market changes that are afoot. Dr. Albert Telfian is this year's eminent speaker for the Raj Rocks Distinguished Lecture Series. He is the director of pediatric neurosurgery at Hasbro Children's Hospital and is an associate professor of neurosurgery at Brown University. His talk is titled, Evolving Concepts of Lumbar Endoscopic Spine Decompression. Another keynote speaker is Dr. Susan Blank, the co-founder and chief medical officer of the Atlanta Healing Center. She has a national weekly radio show named Detailing Addiction that airs on America's Web Radio. Her talk is titled, Pathophysiology of Controlled Substance Use, Overuse, Abuse, and Dependency Addiction. Just go to our website, acip.org. You'll see the link there for online registration, and we hope to see you in Dallas in April for our annual meeting. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by Medtronic, your partner in personalized pain solutions for patients with musculoskeletal pain, cancer pain, severe spasticity, or chronic pain. To learn more about Medtronic solutions, call 888-638-7627 or visit back.com. Up next, an interview with Dr. Hans Hansen. The topic? Difficult patients. Stay with us here on the ACIP podcast. We want to welcome to the ACIP podcast Dr. Hans Hansen. He is a board member of ACIP, also a former president of ACIP. Hello, Dr. Hansen. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Tom. How are you doing?
We are talking to Dr. Hansen all the way from North Carolina to Kentucky via Skype, the wonders of technology. You, as I mentioned, are on the board of ACIP. You have your own private practice over there, the Pain Relief Centers in, is it Conover?
Conover, North Carolina. I have a number of offices throughout the central Piedmont of North Carolina in a surgery center kind of stuck right in the middle. So it kind of is a big umbrella around the central part of the state. It works out.
And you are also an instructor of at many of our ACIP courses. And one of the lessons that you teach, one of the lectures that you give is about difficult patients. And that's what we're going to talk about today here on the ACIP podcast. But before we get to our podcast, you have gotten into the podcasting venture yourself. Tell us about that.
Well, inspiration comes from many sources, including you. I think that there's a lot of messages that can be portrayed to not only our patients, but to our members and just a physician community and provider community in general. And it can be conveyed at some of the most miserable parts of the day when we're sitting in a car, when we're stuck in traffic, or maybe we're running on a treadmill. There's a lot of time that we use, and sometimes we don't use it as efficiently as we need to, and enter podcasting. Podcasting is an efficient, nice way to get a message out and really control a message, and that's why I'm doing it.
All right. Our topic today is difficult patients, and we'll get into specifics of difficult patients, different types of difficult patients and the things that they do or maybe don't do. But in broad terms, how would you define a difficult patient?
Well, it's kind of like you know it when you see it and you feel it when you feel it. Difficult patients are often the bane of many physicians' day. They come into the office sometimes with an agenda. They come into the office sometimes not knowing that the problem is going to be difficult for us. In other words, there may be a communication issue. There may be problems with anything from the front desk all the way back. And it may be problems with the individual himself. You know, coming into a pain clinic or coming into a physician's office is a difficult thing. You expose yourself. And when we just don't connect or the patient-physician relationship is challenged in so many ways, the encounter becomes more difficult. Now, when the patient becomes less logical and more emotional, the situation can go so many different directions. It's incumbent upon us to control the environment of care and the meeting.
A patient's difficult behavior, could it be viewed as a symptom of something else in their lives? And I'm thinking the same way that we tell patients that pain is not a disease. Pain is a symptom. And so a patient's difficult behavior could be a symptom of something else going on in their lives that if you can drill down and find out what that is, perhaps the problem can be nipped.
Well, you're correct. That's our responsibility as caregivers. We have to take within the context of a big differential diagnosis this broad word we call pain. And one of my five rules of pain medicine is pain is a description. It's not a real entity. It's so many things to so many different people. It's a lot different to a World War II vet than, say, to a different culture. It's a lot different to somebody who's young than somebody that's old. Or there's always that infamous secondary gain issue. So dealing with difficult people or dealing with a patient that is difficult is not just a personality-driven problem. It also is biopsychosocial.
Yeah, there's a lot of psychology involved in treating these patients, isn't there?
There is. And that's kind of a drill down to the first thing that we do when we walk in the room is we establish a line of communication. And it's not only in our voice, it's visual, it's physiologic. they've got some problems going. They may be just plain hard of hearing and they're faking it. It may be cultural, and it's an active process. It's multidimensional. It requires somebody to return an action, to do something to help us lead into the next segment of our visit, where we try to figure the patient out, being what it is.
How big a problem is this, at least in terms of percentage? What percentage of patients would you say would fall into the difficult category?
Yeah, the difficult category could easily be just a factor of the day, a factor of the mood, the time of day, the type of disease they have. So I'm going to, you know, I throw it out at 50% of the folks that I deal with come in with problems. You know, the light at the end of the tunnel sometimes is the pain clinic. I'll send them to the pain clinic, and we just have to convince them we're not a truck. And once we get the lines of communication established and we kind of pull down some of the pushback, the difficult patient generally becomes much easier to deal with.
So you're saying that half of the patients could be classified as difficult patients?
Sure. Sometimes a difficult patient is demanding. Sometimes they're insecure in their setting.
Okay.
They sometimes are just a victim. And I have a saying that a victim is the most powerful person in the room. They strain the patient-physician relationship. Sometimes they're manipulative. Let's face it, we deal with controlled substances. We hear it all. These people are, again, acting more on emotion than logic because they have either a disease state or an ongoing problem that is poorly understood. But I'd say easily 30% to 50% of the patients are noncompliant, trouble communicators, and they break limits sometimes, become very demanding, and sometimes they just don't understand what we're doing. So that's our job, is to pull back from a potentially difficult encounter.
Demanding in what way? Demanding a particular drug, whether it's oxycodone or hydrocodone, that they're actually asking or demanding that you give them something that they're probably that in your medical opinion they don't necessarily need. And so now you've got this type of dynamic going between the two of you.
That's exactly what we do as providers and physicians. Sorry if I use the term provider. That's what we are.
Right.
It offends some people sometimes, but you know, let's all be on the same page here. We give them what they need, not what they want. And it's no different than a pediatrician getting pressured by a mother for an antibiotic when it's not indicated. We deal with controlled substances. And remember, pain doesn't kill anybody. Pills kill people. People also are difficult when they don't see that you're following their pathway. Let's just take for an example a workman's comp problem, say an injury to the low back. If we're not really buying into the level of perceived disability, they're not happy. There's always something behind the something. And that's where we have to be proactive in finding the answers as opposed to being reactive.
And that's, I guess, where the whole concept of communication with the patient, letting them know and getting them to understand why you are prescribing what you are prescribing as opposed to what they came in asking for.
Or treating them with the type of treatment that we are. We are interventionalist, and sometimes the best thing we are is non-interventional. You know, but sometimes a difficult patient wants to pull you into their world. And you brought up controlled substances, and that's the hardest thing for all of us. We are so pressured for time, and somebody with a real demand for a certain drug or a certain something, they're time robbers, and they know, and some are real good at it, they can wear you down. And they're used to maybe some busy primary care guy or gal, just, I got to get out of the room, and they just write the prescription. But we're not that way. Mm-hmm. We can bend a bit, but we must be predictable. We need to set limits. We have to have barriers and do things well. And we can't do everything well. Sometimes we have to delegate that to other people, like nurses, other staff members, even referral sources.
There is a phenomenon that's quite commonly known as white coat hypertension. Okay, when someone goes in just to see, and I'm talking about their primary care provider, there's this idea of white coat hypertension, so their BP is going to be elevated just because they happen to be in the doctor's office. Is there a white coat intimidation that pain patients see their pain doctor as someone that they can't communicate with? And what can a pain physician do to open up those lines of communication with them?
Well, you're right. You know, difficult patients, especially those that have an agenda, they want you to be unsteady. They want you to feel a little uncomfortable. And it's our responsibility, of course, to neutralize that behavior. But there's a huge difference between hearing and listening. Patients relax more, this white coat hypertension. They relax more when they understand that you're listening. So many pain patients have been to so many places, and they have not only been ignored, they've been demeaned or else delegated to the side. And that leads to certain behaviors. And remember, the tail doesn't wag the dog. I call it twog. If a patient starts bullying you or has abnormal behaviors, it has to be dealt with. And that's a skill set. You need to be scripted for those things. So when they come in and they're anxious, you have a script for that. You have a way to neutralize the situation. It's through communication. That word keeps coming up, communication.
What is the line between difficult and abusive or bullying?
Well, bullies pick on weaker people by definition. But bullies often were victims themselves. They're insecure, and they, again, want you unsteady. They come in usually with a pretty good script themselves. And I think most of us that have done this a while know when somebody is pushing and nothing else works, but the only thing I can take is, and fill in the blank. But bullies are insecure. I just always recommend that if a patient-physician relationship is challenged by a bully, that you pick your battles carefully. There is no question that the bullies know that most of what we do is a one-way street. They are the patient, and we have limited tools to just say what we want to say or do what we want to do. We have to be professionals. They know that. So once again, it's always a good idea to have a script in the back of your head, let it roll off your tongue, and be able to leave the room. Pick your battles carefully, because they'll retaliate.
Join us next month on the ACIP podcast as we continue our conversation with Dr. Hans Hansen about difficult patients. We will be addressing non-compliant patients, no-shows, and what to do when a patient becomes violent. Let's take a look at some medical news, both general medical news and pain medicine news that you might have missed. New research has discovered that smoking might be able to help with pain relief. It can also increase the chance for addiction. The research was done in rats at the University of Toronto and reported in the journal Neuropsychopharmacology. Nicotine can increase the speed that codeine is converted into morphine in the brain by increasing the amount of the enzyme CYP2D.
According to pharmacology, toxicology, and psychiatry professor Rachel Tyndale, quote, "We've known for some time that codeine was metabolized in the liver, but we've now discovered that this is also happening within the brain itself." The rats were divided into four groups. One group received nicotine for 7 days before receiving codeine. One group received the beta blocker propranolol, which inhibits CYP2D, thus blocking codeine's activation. One group was given both nicotine and propranolol, and the fourth group was the control, receiving neither. The researchers found that the rats that received nicotine had much more morphine in their brains and had greater pain relief. The opposite was found for the rats that received propranolol. Despite the disparity in the brain morphine levels, blood morphine levels were essentially the same in all groups. Such results are causing researchers to view the brain as not just a passive receptor for drugs, but rather as an active metabolizer. Researchers in California have discovered a connection between brain inflammation triggered by chronic nerve pain and brain signaling associated with mood and motivation. The researchers, based at the University of California, Irvine, and the University of California, Los Angeles, found the connection when they examined immune cell growth in the brains of mice and rats with chronic pain. The team discovered that the inflammation increased the rate that specific immune cells grew and became activated. These microglia set off chemical signals that inhibited dopamine release. When given a drug that inhibited the activation of these microglia, dopamine release returned, and so did reward-motivated behavior. The findings were published in the Journal of Neuroscience. Kaiser Health News and National Public Radio report that Mount Sinai Medical School in New York actively recruits students with undergraduate degrees in the humanities instead of the traditional pre-med undergraduate route. Started in 1987, the program is called HUMED. Mount Sinai recruits these students while they are still undergrads. They are encouraged to continue with their humanities majors, and Mount Sinai offers them the science courses they need during the summer. Since its inception, these humanities-centric students have done just as well in med school as those who came from the traditional pre-med track. The program's philosophy is that a more academically diverse student body will translate into a more well-rounded graduating class. According to Dr. David Muller, Dean of Medical Education at Mount Sinai, quote, "People who look at the same problems through different lenses will make us better in the long run." Described as being like a cardiac pacemaker except for pain relief, Swedish scientists have harnessed the technology of a small ion pump in organic electronics to deliver the body's own pain alleviators. Exact dosages can be delivered to the precise location where pain signals reach the spinal cord. This research has been ongoing for 10 years, and the results published in the open-access journal Science Advances, a new sister publication of the journal Science. The ion pump was constructed from organic electronics. An electric current is run through the pump, and the neurotransmitter gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA, G-A-B-A, is spread as a thin cloud. The pump will also be able to deliver therapeutic substances to the brain or other parts of the body in addition to the spinal cord. Medical marijuana. Currently, 23 states allow physicians to prescribe marijuana, but only two states, Massachusetts and New York, require training for prescribers. Massachusetts requires 2 hours. New York requires even more. New York's training results in 4.5 hours of AMA Category 1 CME credits. The training also is not cheap. The cost to physicians is $250. How many physicians in New York who will undergo the training remains to be seen, but a website, marijuanadoctors.com, conducted a survey of 500 New York doctors. After the survey, participants were told about the state's CME requirements and the cost. Only one physician of the 500 surveyed expressed interest in going through with the training. What are patients most concerned about when it comes to their health? Knowing what health questions they searched on the internet might give us a clue. So what were the top Google searched health topics in 2015?
According to Google's News Lab, they were, is pneumonia contagious? How much water should I drink? How many calories should I eat? What is lupus? How far along am I? When do you ovulate? What is gluten? How long does the flu last? And the number one question, is bronchitis contagious? In a previous podcast, we reported on the high cost of some drugs. In 2015, the Food and Drug Administration approved the highest number of drugs with novel ingredients ever, a total of 45. While the new Hep C drugs we reported on before have been getting a lot of press because of the high price for a course of treatment, they are not the most expensive new drugs to come onto the market. A breast cancer drug named Ibrance from Pfizer costs $118,200 a year. But the most expensive new drug is one called Orkambi from Vertex Pharmaceuticals. Orkambi improves lung function in patients with cystic fibrosis. A one-year supply costs $259,000. And finally, what are the best and worst states to practice medicine? The answer is, of course, highly subjective, but Physicians Practice website has been ranking the states from best to worst for a number of years. Their 2015 rankings are now out, and using an algorithm they developed, data on the following factors were considered: cost of living, physician density, disciplinary actions taken against physicians, tax burden per capita, the amount paid in malpractice awards, and Medicare's geographic practice cost index. The report did not list a number one state. Rather, it listed the top five states, which are Idaho, Nevada, Georgia, Texas, and Utah. The report did, however, rank the bottom five states in order. They are Massachusetts, California, Hawaii, Maryland, and in last place as the worst state in which to practice medicine, New York. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by Medtronic, your partner in personalized pain solutions for patients with musculoskeletal pain, cancer pain, severe spasticity, or chronic pain. To learn more about Medtronic solutions, call 888-638-7627 or visit back.com. In state society news, the Georgia Society of Interventional Pain Physicians has set their meeting date for 2016. The GSIPP 12th Annual Pain Summit will be held April 22nd through the 24th, 2016, at the Ritz-Carlton Lodge, Reynolds Plantation, in Greensboro, Georgia. For details, go to gsipp.com. The Florida Society of Interventional Pain Physicians will hold its annual meeting in 2016 on May 20th through the 22nd. That meeting will be held at the Orlando World Center Marriott in Orlando. Just check out fsipp.org for more details. The West Virginia Society of Interventional Pain Physicians will conduct a conference titled Pain 2016, presented by Dr. Timothy Deer, July 22nd through the 24th. The location is the Bahamas, the Atlantis Hotel on Paradise Island. Details can be found at this website, www.paincon.info. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by StimWave, maker of the Freedom Spinal Cord Stimulation System. Find out more about the Freedom Spinal Cord Stimulation System at stimwave.com. And by St. Jude Medical, makers of spinal cord stimulation and radiofrequency therapy products. Visit them at professional.sjm.com. Thank you once again to Dr. Hans Hansen for being our guest on this ACIP podcast, and be sure to listen to the second part of our interview with him next month. Last month, we found out that among medical specialties, orthopedic surgeons drink the most coffee, followed by radiologists. In third place were general surgeons. The least amount of coffee was consumed by anesthesiologists. Well, this month, we find out about music listening preferences in ORs. According to researchers at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, surgeons prefer loud top 40 music, attendings prefer classical, and anesthesiologists prefer blues or jazz played at a low volume. The researchers suggest that what they call a common denominator music style for the OR is classical music. Thank you for listening to this ACIP podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, criticisms, or perhaps even a compliment or two, just send me an email, Tom, T-O-M, at ACIP, A-S-I-P-P dot O-R-G. This is Tom Prigge. Please join us next month for another ACIP podcast.